Howie Hawkins is a retired Teamster from Syracuse and is considering running for president. Hawkins has been the Green Party candidate for governor of New York three times, taking in 5% of the vote in 2014. He has started an exploratory committee as he considers running for the Green Party nomination for president in 2020. Howie Hawkins is in Albany today, and he joins us now live on Midday Magazine. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
If you run, you will promote what's called an eco-socialist Green New Deal. We've heard a lot about Green New Deals. Is this any different, the eco-socialist approach?
Yeah, we've got to take social ownership of some key industries to really achieve the goal of 100% clean energy by 2030 and to protect the economic bill of rights, which is part of the Green New Deal, the right to a job at a living wage, an income above poverty, comprehensive health care, decent housing, and a good public education from pre-K through college. And when you have concentrated wealth, that translates into concentrated political power, and those programs are in jeopardy. But going back to the goal of 100% clean energy, we will never get there as long as Exxon and the Koch brothers are reinvesting their earnings in more fossil fuel extraction. And so we need to take over the big oil and take those earnings and reinvest them in renewables, clean energy.
Is it legally possible to nationalize an oil company in this country?
Of course it is. We basically nationalized 25% of manufacturing during World War II to turn that industry on a dime to build the arsenal for democracy that beat the Nazis. It's been done. We've had national corporations like the Tennessee Valley Authority, like Amtrak before it was privatized back about 45 years ago.
Democrats have been touting their own Green New Deal. It came out recently. You did so 9 years ago. How has your plan from 2010 changed over the years at all? And is it any different from the plan recently offered by Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Markey?
I think the emphasis has changed since I first ran in 2010. We were coming out of the Great Recession. So the economic Bill of Rights part was more central. And the investment in clean energy was more an economic stimulus to get the economy going now. Now, with the climate crisis really upon us, that is the thing that is more the leading edge. Although I believe we need both, because unless people feel economic security, they're not going to want to make changes to get climate security. So that has changed in terms of emphasis, but the basic content is there. The only thing I would say at this point is we're emphasizing more that we need social ownership of key industries to make the transition to 100% clean energy, and that we need to change not just the energy production system, but all production systems for sustainability, from manufacturing to agriculture to transportation.
You're exploring a campaign for president. What is this process like, this exploratory process?
Well, it's seeing if the support is out there. You know, can I win the nomination? Can I go out and get more votes in the general election? And can we raise enough money? The big expense for our campaign will be ballot access. We have a rough budget of $1.5 million to get 800,000 signatures to get on the 31 states where we don't have a ballot line. Mm-hmm. And in this country, that's a form of voter suppression. In every other industrial country, it's not hard to get on a ballot. In Canada, they don't do president. They have a House of Commons. And up there, you need 25 signatures and a $500 filing fee to run for Congress. I was talking to a guy in Illinois to run as a Green for Congress in Illinois. He needs 16,000 signatures. So it's a real barrier. And a lot of people don't vote because they don't like the Democrats and Republicans. They like the Greens, but we're not on the ballot in a lot of states. So that is the biggest task we have, particularly this first year of what's basically a two-year campaign.
What have you learned about running for office from your three campaigns for governor?
I think that our message resonates with people. And a lot of the media is interested because we give them real substance. We don't beat around a bush or give them slogans without substance. So we get favorable media coverage. The biggest problem we face is the dilemma people face when they think they're splitting the center-left vote and will elect somebody on the far right. Mm-hmm. And it becomes more of an issue as the Republican Party just moves farther and further right. With this president, it's just something you never thought you'd see. So that remains a perennial problem, but that's why we got to be in the election, to raise issues like instant runoff voting and a national popular vote for president, get rid of the Electoral College, and for electing to legislatures proportional representation. So every party gets their fair share of representation and power in the legislature. And, you know, we're a party. I've got as high as 48% running for city council. The 48% of the people that voted for me in my district had no representation on city council.
Some Democrats are wearing the socialist label proudly these days. That was not always the case. It's some of the younger Democrats, but also Bernie Sanders. The word socialist was something that most politicians didn't want labeled on their ballot. What do you think of that word? And is it a tough word to get around for some voters?
It is for some. I think a lot more people are open to it. I think two things have happened in the last 5 or 6 years. First of all, the right wing was calling Obama socialist, which he was anything but. But a lot of people said, I like Obama. If he's a socialist, maybe I am too. And then Bernie Sanders, who's had that label since he was a young man, did not run away from it when he ran for president. And everybody's saying, I like what Bernie says, you know, Medicare for all, tuition-free higher education. Maybe I'm a socialist. So now the discussion is open, which is good, because uniquely among the developed countries in the world, we don't have a strong socialist movement. So when people think of socialism, they think, well, that's government. Everything else is private and capitalist. But socialism is really about economic democracy, whether it's a private enterprise like a cooperative or a public enterprise. We can have public enterprise, but if it's not democratic, it's not socialist. It's just state capitalism.
But there are some who look at socialism and say, look at Venezuela. What a mess.
Yeah, that was a predominantly capitalist economy. That was a failure of capitalism, not socialism. They didn't get to socialism. They took the oil revenues and provided some social programs, kind of like Bernie Sanders wants to do with health care and some other things. But the problem was that the wealth may remain concentrated in an oligarchic elite, and they sabotaged the economy. And that's the danger when Bernie Sanders says his kind of New Deal liberalism is socialism. It doesn't deal with that concentrated economic power, which translates into concentrated political power and can undermine the social programs.
What do you think of some of the Democrats who are running and the status of the Democratic Party right now?
Well, I've known Bernie Sanders since 72, and in a way he's a model because he's clear on his message. He's got the same message since 1972. He ran for Senate in a special election and then for governor that year, and I was dropping leaflets for him. And so I admire that. I think he's the best candidate among the Democrats. He really believes what he says. Of the others, I think most of them are kind of Clinton-Obama kind of corporate Democrats who are talking more to the left. But then when you scratch the surface, like take Kirsten Gillibrand. She said she was for a job guarantee, but I heard an interview the other day. Well, what she really means is job training, not a Works Progress Administration kind of program where you have jobs on the shelf for public services or public works. And when there's unemployment, the local community has those plans they've developed. Federal government funds 90%, the local government 10%, and you put people to work. That's not what she's talking about. So I think those people are kind of the traditional corporate Democrat. And Elizabeth Warren's kind of in the middle. She's not a socialist. She says I'm a, what, something about her bones. To my bones, I'm a capitalist, something like that. She's a regulator. You know, she's, you know, wants to regulate finance in particular, protect consumers, which is fine. When you have markets, you need both market signals and social regulation for them to work. But she's not dealing with that concentrated economic power in the hands of an oligarchic elite, and that affects the whole political process. So I don't think she goes far enough. So that's what I'm looking at. I think, you know, even if Bernie Sanders gets elected, we'll be demanding more. You know, for example, you really want to get to a Green New Deal going for 100% clean energy by 2030. I haven't heard Sanders say that's his goal, but that's what the non-binding resolution that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Markey put in. If he's not for that, we'll push him for that. And if he's for that, well, how are you going to do it when the Koch brothers and Exxon are controlling the oil industry? So, you know, we'll have something to say no matter which one of them is nominated.
Can you really go 100% in just 11 years?
According to Mark Jacobson, an engineer at Stanford, in a study done with colleagues, first one, UC Davis colleague, this was published in Scientific American in popular form and then in an academic journal later, the whole world could have got there if we'd started earlier to nothing but wind, water, and sun by 2030. The technology is there. It's really a matter of mobilizing the resources, which is capital. We have plenty of capital. There are trillions of dollars sitting on the sidelines, whether banks put it at the Fed or it's in the, you know, reserves of corporations like Amazon or it's offshore in these tax havens. There's plenty of capital. the bottleneck is labor. I mean, we've had studies since the late 90s. Ross Gelbspan was editor of the Boston Globe, and before that a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter. And he had some retired oil executives and engineers and economists at Stanford and Harvard and MIT do a study in the late 90s. They found out the bottleneck was labor. Same thing with the Jacobson study done for New York. 4.5 million jobs to build this system out. And we don't have 4.5 million unemployed people here. People would come to New York if we did it in New York. And same thing nationally. So it's technologically possible. It's financially possible. It's really a matter of political will.
You are considering a run for president. When do you think you'll have a decision?
I'm looking at late May, 6 or 8 weeks from now. Want to see if we can raise enough money. Basically, we're looking at 1.5 million. We have a lot of volunteers to do petitioning, but we need some people to coordinate and be out there every day and know what they're doing to train people. And that's a lot of work. That's a big task. And I want to be on the ballot in all 51 ballots, counting D.C.
Howie Hawkins is a retired Teamster from Syracuse. He's in Albany today as he considers running for president on the Green Party line next year. Howie Hawkins, thank you.
Thank you.